All right, here we are. Last Sunday of the year, ain't it? Last Sunday. Everybody's ready for everything to go back to normal, and that's what we was just talking about. And be able to schedule normal things again and all that stuff. But it's one of those kind of iconic, in a certain way, like the end of a decade. And it's, I don't know, I'm not trying to be spooky or anything like that, but I see people posting things about the roaring 20s that we're fixing to head into. The roaring 20s. That doesn't have a very good connotation from the last roaring 20s we had. And I think that we're in for another round of roaring 20s this time. It's something you sit and, like what we talked about last week about some current events that's going on and politics and what we ought to be focusing on more about the kingdom of God and things like that. And, you know, used to, it seemed like in the news cycle there was I don't want to say a catastrophe, but it was some, exciting event that was happening periodically, but it wasn't, but ever so often. And now, one story just feeds right into the next one, which feeds right into the next. I mean, people don't have time to be excited or upset or whatever it is about whatever's in the news long enough for it to like run full course. They're all upset about what's in the news today, and then tomorrow they've forgotten about it, and they're all upset about what's in the news tomorrow, and then they're forgot about it. And it's just one after another after another. I talked to a friend of mine in Virginia from last night. I hadn't talked to him in a long time. But I called him because I want to know what's going on over there. Like, I want to know from somebody there, is it really, you hear it in the news here and you see it on Facebook here about the, what the governor's doing and all that stuff. And that's what he told me. He said, well, it has the potential, if it went long enough, to turn into something. But he said, it's all politics. It's all about each side trying to excite the other side with the media and with their own fears and things like that so they can, get votes. That's what it's really about. He said, I'm not that concerned about it. And it just goes to show you that your perception of what's going on based on the information given is something totally different than a man. But that's what the world does in the media and everything where everybody gets. It's people's reality. People don't live in the reality of the kingdom of God and that being what's most important, that people don't live there no more. It's all about what they see on their phone or what they see on the TV, and it's confined to that one lane all the time. And in a lot of ways, we do the same thing. This week, what we've been hearing all about is this matter in Missouri. Well, no, not in Missouri. In the whole nation, of the legal age for buying tobacco being raised to 21. And everybody's so upset about this. And that's all that's in your news feed, and it's all that's going on. And I don't know. It's interesting to me to sit and watch who's commenting and what they're saying about these things. Because, people can only hide their hypocrisy. It has a short shelf life, and then what they really are comes out. And so, I don't know. I don't like to be obsessed or to obsess over all of these current events or these petty things that go on like this. But it's also not a bad idea to read them and just understand. Stay caught up on what's going on so you're not like an ostrich with your head in the sand, oblivious to what's going on around you. After all, Jesus did tell us to watch, didn't he? Well, watch what? The clouds in the sky? Well, no, you better watch what's going on in the world around you. And, he also said, be of good cheer. And he also said, fear not, a whole bunch of times. But he did say to watch. And so I want to read a couple of different scriptures here this morning. We're going to be in Luke chapter 6 and in Luke chapter 7. And it kind of, goes hand in hand with what I was just talking about. Our government is an immoral entity. It's not moral. It's ran by immoral men and women with immoral intentions and selfishly driven. And for the Christians in America to put any kind of stock in the morality of the government is foolish, first of all. But you also need to understand that the government cannot regulate morality with law. They can to a certain degree, but then at some point in the matter, their hypocrisy and their immorality is going to come into play. And then, you know, an immoral result is what's going to happen. And everybody's so hung up on, you know, changing the government so that it can, you know, can advance morality in this country. And you're barking up the wrong tree. It's just not going to happen. And so I want to read in chapter 7, Luke chapter 7, verse 31 through 35. We're going to read this, and then I'll jump back to Luke 6, and we'll read verse 45 in that chapter. Excuse me. So, verse 31 of chapter 7. And the Lord said, and this is Jesus, said, whereunto then shall I liken the men of this generation? And to what are they like? You might ask yourself the same question about the men of your generation. Every generation that's ever come along can ask themselves that same question about the men of their generation. You are a man of your generation. You ever think about that? I am a man of my generation. So what's being said about me? What's being said about you? Jesus said, what can be said of the men of this generation? What are they like? They are like unto children sitting in the marketplace and calling one to another and saying, we have piped unto you and ye have not danced. We have mourned to you and you have not and ye have not wept. And he was talking about how that no matter what side of the fence you're trying to placate or trying to play up to, you're not going to please either side of it with your actions. You're supposed to be trying to live for God and please God with your life. And that's what he was saying. He said, for John the Baptist came neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and ye say, he hath a devil. And the Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and ye say, behold, a gluttonous man and a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners. So he said, you know, there is no pleasing you people, you Pharisees. I mean, on one hand, this man who's living this way, completely committed in a certain way, you say he's insane, he's full of the devil. And then here I am, the Son of Man, the God incarnate, come to earth, and here I am, and I eat and drink, and you say I'm a glutton and a wine bibber. So he summed it all up with this. He said, but wisdom is justified of all her children. Now we kind of just breeze right over that and wonder, you know, but wisdom is justified by all her children. What he was saying there is he said, kind of repeating in a different way what he said back in verse 45 of chapter 6. He said, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. And for of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. Everybody likes to quote that little part of the verse there, but they, you know, kind of don't read the whole thing in context. Now, if you read the last part of verse 35 over in chapter 7, but wisdom is justified of all her children, it kind of backs up what he said there in verse 45. What's inside of you is what's going to come out. And, you know, it don't always happen quickly. Sometimes it does. You meet somebody sometimes and they wear everything out on the edge of their sleeve and they're just as transparent as a glass book, and you can know right away what they are. Some people have made an art form of hiding it or disguising it as something else or having different intentions and being able to fool people. And so it's not wise practice to just, you know, run in and make a knee-jerk assessment of someone and, you know, right off the bat, unless it's just as blatant as the paint on the wall. Jesus didn't do that. Jesus wouldn't let himself become entangled with the affairs of this world or even the drama that was going on politically in his day. He didn't let that be what defined him. You know, I mean, there was even the matter of taxation. We've talked about it a little bit this month there where Peter come to him and said, you know, taxes are due and I ain't got no money. What am I going to do? You know, can you somehow justify us not paying our taxes? Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what's God's. Now go down there and catch a fish and there'll be some money in his mouth for your taxes. He did that way, I honestly believe, to make Peter understand that, hey, look, I'll take care of that. It's literally insignificant. You know, me personally, just because we're standing here talking, you know, taxation is one of those things that I have been extremely vocal about being very much against. In a lot of ways, I feel like it's theft. But there's always been taxation. I got to go down this week and pay my taxes. I seen you go by the house the other day and I knew you'd been to Greenville to pay your taxes. And it's a real bummer when you look at your little pile of money and you think, this is not mine because I've got to go pay my taxes. But, you know, the Lord provides for it. I mean, he gave Peter a coin to pay his taxes with in the mouth of a fish he caught out of the lake. I mean, of all the places for it to come from, it was, come on. It was almost a way to make him understand that, look, it's not important. I'll take care of it. You don't need to be worried about that. And, you know, Jesus didn't let himself become entangled and let that be what defined him when he was doing his ministry here on earth. He don't want us to do the same thing either. And, you know, we should never look to the world's response to our efforts to live righteously as an indicator of how effective we are being or how we stand with God. You know, there's a lot of people who literally go by how they're being perceived by a lost world as to their own spirituality. And you're looking to the wrong thing. He said there at the end of that, wisdom is justified of all her children. Jesus looked at those Pharisees and said, if I do this, you say I'm wrong. If I do it this way, you say I'm wrong. They're unrighteous. You can't expect unrighteous people to make righteous. They're not righteous. And if that's what you're trying to be, then don't go to them to try to figure out if you're righteous or not. Jesus said, wisdom is justified by her children. Well, you know, you can make that application literally, like by your children, but that's not even, we've said that before, that's not always literally an indication of where you are spiritually. People are able to make their own choices when they ain't a child no more. They can choose to walk away. But, you know, the effects of the way you live your life are seen by what comes after you as a result of how you've lived your life. I mean, you know, this matter of what I started out talking about the law being changed, about, you know, a legal age limit for purchasing tobacco or whatever, you know. People get so hung up on that, and it's literally just a number that some person put out there to make something legal or illegal. And, you know, it's what I commented on something the other day. I said, you know, how come, you know, obviously, sure, you don't want your 14-year-old smoking or drinking or doing drugs or, you know, vaping. That's a big thing everybody's against nowadays, and it's an issue, no doubt. But how come 4 years later, all of a sudden, something magical happens, and now it's okay for him to do all these things? Well, the fact of the matter is, it's not okay still. See, it's a moral issue. But people are immoral. They've tried to pull their morals from an immoral place and then set up immoral parameters to regulate morality. It don't make any sense. The source of morality is this right here, and God. He's the one who laid down moral law. And man has turned his back on all of it. Our society, our nation, is not a Christian nation anymore. In a lot of ways. I heard someone say it the other day and called us a post-Christian nation. And at first, it galled me a little bit. I kind of like, it rankled me a little bit. But the more I think about it, that's the reality of where we're at. We were once a Christian nation. And we are not a Christian nation anymore. There's still some Christians here. But even that, I mean, my FedEx man came by yesterday and, you know, was talking about how profane all the other drivers were there where he, at the terminal where he pulls out of. And one of them is a woman and her husband's the pastor of a church. And she's extremely profane. And she said something about, and he asked her, why are you worried about going to church on Sunday, having Sunday off so you can go to church if you're cussing like a sailor out here every day? And she said, well, you got to go repent sometime. And see, that's the state of our church. That's the state of the producers of the idea of morality in our nation now. So there is no morality. What they're calling morality is immorality. It's not per the order of God. It's not by His law. It's not per His law. And if you're constantly running to those sources to try to establish what's moral or immoral, or go and look, you're not ever going to change. It's hard for me to not comment sometimes when I see stuff. And every now and then I do, because, man, you got to be a voice somewhere. But you need to understand, going to be, you ain't going to change anything. John come out as a voice crying in the wilderness of Jesus, you know, but Herod still cut his head off. And that was the fact of the matter. You know, Jesus came preaching and teaching and healing and doing, you know, we don't even, I don't really think, even have a clue as to how much he really did in those short 3 years of his ministry. In the people, just the people that he healed. And the people that he cast devils out of. I mean, where he was, the devils fled. So it said many came to him and had devils depart from, cast out of him. I mean, it wasn't just a few isolated incidents that made the news on, you know, certain circles. No, it was a big deal. And they still crucified him, you know. But that didn't slow him down from doing the work he was supposed to do. We have to be a voice. And we have to say something every once in a while. But you need to understand that you do it for the kingdom of heaven and not for the kingdom of Seth or the kingdom of Straight Paths Bible Church or the kingdom of your righteous stance towards everybody. I mean, it's not what Jesus did. And, you know, your wisdom will be justified by your children, by not only your offspring, but by the things that come as a result of you having lived right. You know, there, all of us make mistakes through our youth and through raising our kids and different things like that. I mean, look, but it doesn't, you know, that is not what defines a person forever. And, you know, there are things that you can gather from mistakes made and from things done right. Why do you think the Lord said, go back and seek ye out the old path and walk therein? If all that you're ever supposed to draw from is the mistakes that your forefathers made, why would he tell you to go back and find the old path and walk in it? Because that's not what you're supposed to be drawing from the past. You're supposed to go back and find the right way that they did things and walk in those ways. You know, what our society has done now is going back 30 or 40 years and said everything prior to this date, scrap it all. See, because they have redefined what morality is. And, you know, it's one of those things that even an immoral government knows that there has to be some morality somewhere or else anarchy will ensue. So their own hypocrisy will bite them. More often than not, I mean, they have to make, see, that's why they oppose themselves so much. And you see it so often, them, you know, getting themselves in a predicament because they're defending iniquity on one side and yet promoting it or condemning it on the other hand, because it can only go so far before it starts to become counterproductive. And the Lord said, listen, don't base, you know, don't get tangled up in all these affairs. He's laid it out what his moral law is for us and how we're supposed to live and how we're supposed to deal with people. And he said, if you'll dwell right there and don't entangle yourselves with the affairs of this world that way, then you'll be doing what you're supposed to do. That'd be pleasing to the Lord. You know, our observation and assessment of the spiritual state of an individual should always be approached in certain ways. You know, I have been guilty of this in both arenas where I've met somebody and thought to myself, you know what, that's a good man right there. He's a good man. But the more I get to know him, I realize that he's not a good man. Same on the other hand. I've met people before, and my first impression of them was, you know, I'll just give you wide berth here. I'm not going to. But I found out in the long run that they were good people. They were righteous people. Because I approached the situation based on my own judgment and my own ideas, my own understanding of what morality was, what righteousness was, and not what God said it was. You know, there's some things you got to approach with patience. You know, there's people who, and look, all of us are in a different state of growth in this spiritual walk and in our life. And you've got to give people a little bit of grace. And, you know, the world says give them the benefit of the doubt. But look, there's no room for doubt when you're dealing with God's word and what it says. But, you know, you need to be patient. The Lord was mighty patient. Think about his relationship with his disciples. Think about his relationship with old Peter. And he was really patient with Peter for a long time. And Peter, it would appear that he was headed down the right path of thought. And then right in the middle of it, he'd just jump off the track. No, no, here we go again. No, no, Peter, come back, come back. But he was patient with him. He could have, if he'd have reacted towards Peter the way Peter thought he would, the way Peter assumed that he was going to, there wouldn't have been no hope for Peter. That's why Peter finally just said, after he denied the Lord, he left and just said, I'm done. There's no way I would be this patient with somebody. I'm out. That's why Jesus said, go tell him, come back. You know, we got to be patient. Now, this is, this is with the assumption that we have some discernment about who to be patient with and long-suffering with. I mean, look, if you're being led by the Spirit, I believe he'll guide you into all truth. He said so. So I think he'll give you insight into when to speak up and all this stuff. But patience, you got to be patient. Humility. You know, this has been a hard thing for me in my life. I've always thought I was not a very proud person. But if you ask anybody else, that's not the case. Everybody else has always thought I was a pretty proud person. And, you know, I've seen it have adverse effects on relationships that I've been in because of my pride, being prideful of my being right. You know, I'm right. I know I'm right. I'm basing everything that I believe on what's right, so I know I'm right. And in that right, I'm proud. And I'm not humble because I have a right to be arrogant about it because I'm right. See, that's just not right. That's all wrong. You know, try approaching someone with arrogance, even if you're right. And it's not going to have the results that you want. Jesus was not arrogant. He was humble. He answered people with the truth, but in humility. You know, there was people that he was able to minister to and heal. The woman of Samaria at the well. If he would have went there as arrogant as all the other Jews, and that's what she thought he was too. When he showed up, she said, what are you doing here? Why are you talking to me? You're a Jew. And he had to be humble. He humbled himself. That's what made such a big impression on her, is that he was humble. Now, he did answer her in truth. I mean, he told her, she said, go come see a man that's told me everything I've ever done. But his humility, it made a believer out of her. It made her understood his intentions were pure and that they were coming from a place of love. And that's what we got to do too. It's a hard lesson sometimes because you have to humble yourself. It ain't about this thing, you know, a badge, like a merit badge you earn in the Boy Scouts. I'm humble. No. Humble means putting yourself at the bottom of the stack. It means maybe not even being in the stack most of the time for the better of something bigger than yourself. And it's a hard thing to do, especially when you know you're right. And you're the one that's been took advantage of because of iniquity or immorality or unrighteousness. But the kingdom of heaven's bigger than that. Another thing we got to do, and it kind of goes along with humility, is the right spirit. You got to approach it in the right spirit. You know, it's kind of just repeating what I just said, but when you approach it, when you run headlong into assessing what someone is, you know, and you do it already assuming that they're not anything they claim to be, or having a, and that, look, I'm not talking about the power of positive thinking. That's a worldly ideal, and there's no magic in the power of positive thinking. But, you know, you ever met somebody who always assumed the good in people? They looked for the good in someone instead of the bad. Have you ever met someone or had to deal with someone who always looks for the bad in someone first? Well, they're a lot more pleasant of a person, and they emulate God. They emulate Jesus by looking for the good in people. That's what he did once again with the woman at the well. He seen what she could be. Peter and all those dirty fishermen, he seen what they could be. He said, "Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men." They weren't fishers of men when he called them away from the sea. And, you know, if we'll approach folks in the right way, with the right spirit, try to see what the Lord sees that they could be, we'll come closer to making a better call on these matters. You got to be honest. You even got to be honest about yourself. You know, this whole matter, you hear this word thrown around nowadays called self-awareness, and how people are they're so unself-aware. And, you know, it's an easy rut to get into. You spend all your time looking out at other people. You don't spend no time looking at yourself. And a lot of times, well, the old timers had a saying called the pot calling the kettle black. And, you know, it hails back even further there where Jesus was talking about, you know, pulling the beam out of your own eye before you try to get the mote out of your neighbor's eye. Most people won't be honest with themselves about what they are, and about their spirit, and about their humility, and about their patience, and about, you know, their own morality even. They won't, you know, most people, that's what's wrong with the world today, you know, that don't know the Lord. They want morality to be what they want it to be. They want immorality to be what they say it is too. And they want it to be fluid amongst everyone. I mean, it can be whatever you want it to be. And it just don't work that way. And it don't work that way in the affairs of this either. You know. It all has to be founded in God's Word. And that's the real crux of the whole matter. You know, if you're trying to pull your ideals of morality and your ideas of what righteousness is and who is righteous and all that stuff, and you're trying to get it from different voices that are out there, different opinions that are out there, you're going to be like a termite in a yo-yo. You'll never have any kind of fixed, you know, true north at all. That's what Jesus was trying to say to these people here. When he made the comparison, he said, you know, John the Baptist come forth and he was this way, and you said he hath a devil. I come forth and do the exact opposite kind of sort of what you're condemning him for, and you say that I'm a glutton. So, you know, there's no fixing the situation here basing it on those things. He said wisdom is justified of all her children. And it's kind of that way it's that way with us. And that's what I'm trying to drive home here. You know, other people will be who your testimony is validated by and through. You know, you've heard the saying, you know, don't toot your own horn and all that kind of stuff. And the Bible says, let another man's lips praise thee. But look, somebody who is not a moral person is going to have a reputation. It's just like he said back there in chapter 6, the verse I read there, Luke 6:45. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, bringing forth that which is good. It's not rocket science. An evil man, out of the evil treasure of his heart, bringing forth that which is evil. And that's just how it works. You know, a man's reputation will precede him. And don't be real quick to jump to a conclusion of him being good or bad till you've known him for a little bit. You know, there were people who said John the Baptist was a devil, full of the devil. Was he? Of course not. They said Jesus was a wine bibber and a glutton. Was he? No, of course not. Have you ever been mislabeled by someone because of their quickness to jump? Of course you have. So have I. I've done it to other people too. You know, the whole point of this is being, you know, effective as a Christian in the time we live in. How effective do you think that the disciples felt that they were being, you know, when they were following Jesus around, listening to him preach and watching him heal people and things like that? I mean, considering the events that were going on in the day they were living in, and considering the understanding that they didn't possess about why he was really here and what he really was doing. You know, it's easy to get to thinking that you're not effective. And, you know, they weren't effective in some ways because of how they went about doing all this stuff. That's what he was trying to teach them. Look, don't get wrapped up in these things. You know, this matter that I was talking about the legal age limit being changed. Do you realize how insignificant that really is? You know, I've seen somebody said on there, you know, oh, they can, you know, vote and they can go and join the military and go die for their country, but they can't buy a pack of cigarettes. Well, look, you're basing what is right or wrong on a government that set parameters for something. I mean, it makes no sense. There's no foundation under what they're basing all this stuff on. And in the end, it's going to be what it's going to be anyway. You know, those disciples thought, you know, at first they thought that the Messiah was coming to liberate them from Rome and the Roman rule over the country. They realized before it was all over with that that's not what he was coming to do. And he spent all of his time trying to make them understand that. And we're several thousand years later, here we are, and kind of in a similar governmental situation. I mean, the government is, you know, got a real strong hold on our society. We like to think that we are free, and in a lot of ways we do still enjoy the benefits of freedom. But the government's, you know, kind of out of control in a lot of ways. And it's not going to be rectified, you know, by us trying to force morality on a society. That's what Sharia law is. That's government trying to enforce their idea of morality on a society by force. And it's nothing but cruel and hypocritical. And the farthest thing from moral that there is. Our government ain't going to be able to do that either. And Jesus was trying to make them understand the same thing about the day they lived in. Government's not going to enforce morality. And they're not going to establish a righteous nation. The only one that's ever going to be that way is the kingdom of heaven. And that's what we ought to be focused on. You know, there's so many things in the news cycle every week, like I said at the beginning, that is there to just keep you stirred up and in a panic almost about what's going to become of our country. What's going to become for our kids? Well, what do you think that Daniel's parents thought when the Assyrians were coming in and fixing to lead them all away? Look, somehow they maintained their composure and managed to put in him what was important to live for. That's what we're supposed to be doing too. You know, my kids are growing up. Y'all got little bitty kids. And, you know, the world that they're growing up in, there's so many more choices now of what the world is saying is moral than what you had, even when you were a kid, or even when I was a kid. I mean, there's always been wickedness, but there was always a brighter light shining for righteousness back then. Now what's shining as a righteous light now is as immoral as the darkness that's out there. And think about what your kids have to choose from now when they say, okay, we're going to, you know, what's the choice I need to make about... Why do you think you see so many of them going down the contemporary route and going down this? I mean, there's a million choices for them. And we better be focusing more our focus on righteousness and morality and what God says it is, and obeying His commandments and living by His law, ought to be a more concentrated form that we live our own lives by now than ever before. Because if our kids stand a chance at all, we're gonna have to step it up. Because they, you know, the world they're growing up in and the world they're gonna be adults in is gonna be hard. It's already hard for them to live in. That's why you see so many of them just falling away. It's overwhelming. And you know, an unmoral society raises an immoral generation. And it just repeats itself over and over. And that's why we're in the state. The church is in the state that it's in because of the same reason. Churches are full of immorality, so you have an immoral generation coming along behind them. If there's any hope for us at all, we better get back to the old way. Seek it out, like it says. Don't look to the world to gauge how spiritual you are. Because they're not the gauge. This word is right here. And that's what we need to be doing. That's what we need to be doing. Wisdom, if you have any, will be justified. Justification, what is it? It's proof that you were right in what you did. Wisdom, if you have any, will be justified by all her children. What comes after you is what's going to let you know whether or not you were walking in the right way or not.